Welcome back to Talk Louisiana. This is Jan Swift, filling in for Jim Engster today. Signature support for Talk Louisiana comes from the office of Mayor President Sharon Weston Broome of East Baton Rouge Parish. The show originates from the Investar Tower on Courcy Boulevard in Baton Rouge and is produced by Robin Dow. Our number is 877-217-5757. We encourage you to call in. Our guests right now are Charles Williams and Jimmy Frederick of the Louisiana Wildlife Federation. This is a nonprofit whose mission is to be the voice for Louisiana's wildlife and natural resources. The Federation is encouraging individuals, property owners, and building managers to participate in Lights Out Louisiana by turning off or turning down outdoor lighting during the spring bird migration. This is taking place through May 31st. You're asked to turn off bright or excess lighting from 11 p.m. until 6 a.m. And both of you guys, thank you for joining us. I love how you work to protect our sacred ecosystem. So I'm looking forward to hearing more about it. Who'd like to start first? Charles, as a board member?
Yes, I'll say a little about that. We're trying to make a dent in a major problem we have in America, North America, which is declining bird populations. A study done in 2019 showed that from 1970 to that time, about 50 years, in North America, there was a 29% decline in birds, as birds of all types, migrants and non-migrants. And the result of this has been many birds virtually disappearing from our migration. So one of the causes of this decline is the collisions with buildings, particularly brightly lit buildings in the night. And so we're asking people to think about what is excessive and what they really need, and to turn off or turn down the lights from 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. And we're hoping that will put a dent in this source of bird decline. There are other sources like habitat loss, but this is a low-hanging fruit type thing. Just turn off the lights, save some electricity, save on your electricity bill, and save a few birds.
I'm just amazed at the number of birds that migrate. If you can touch on that, I mean, it's millions and millions and
hundreds
millions.
Yes, over in the course of this spring migration, there will be hundreds of millions of birds passing over or into Louisiana from Central and South America. And over Baton Rouge itself, the number probably reaches into the low hundred thousands in some nights, but on typically would be 50, 60,000, something like that. So a lot of birds flying very, very high, by the way. They migrate at 1,500, 2,000 feet. But when weather conditions are adverse, low cloud cover, high wind out of the north, fog, they start to come down. They become disoriented by all the lights, and they're attracted to the lights. And that's when they run into the buildings and die in sometimes large numbers.
Sad. So we're in the Mississippi Flyway, right, Jimmy? Directly in the migratory path.
We are, and you know, I like to say that Louisiana is the front door to North America, and that's what they're doing. They're coming right through Louisiana, and they're dispersing throughout North America where they nest and roost for the summer. But you know, over the course of just a couple of days ago, you know, we had 400,000 birds that flew over Louisiana through Baton Rouge, and we do that. We're able to predict that. Not we. Cornell Ornithology Laboratory has a tool called Birdcast. And if you go to birdcast.info, you can actually see the migratory progression every day of how many birds they predict we're going to have flying over Baton Rouge. You can do it on any city in Baton Rouge. You could do it pretty much in any city in the flyway and in pretty much North America, but we're focused on Louisiana, of course. And so we're able to see a few days out when there's high migrations are going to be, and that's when we put out our little lights out alerts so that we can make sure that people know that tonight is a night that we need to make sure that we're turning down or turning out our lights. Our little tagline is, before you hit the hay, hit the switch and turn out the lights. And so, you know, because millions of birds are counting on us. And if we can help that migration and get as many birds to their roosting grounds or nesting grounds as possible, We believe that it's going to make a real difference. Not just us, a lot of people believe that it's going to make a real difference in making sure that all these wonderful birds get to where they need to be. And they're so important to the ecosystem.
And we have we're in a high migration period right now. We've been for the past week. That will continue according to BirdCast this week. Not surprising, since the most intense 30 days for migration in the spring is mid-April to mid-May. Now, it begins kind of on a slow basis in late March and extends on into June. But the critical months, definitely April and May. And right now, we're in a high migration projection for all cities of Louisiana. I checked that last night. So this would be the type of night that, fortunately, we have good, clear weather. So don't think we're going to have too many birds coming down prematurely, so to speak. But if we were to get a front through in a day or two, that would produce a big kill. Now, some years ago over in Galveston, Texas, there was a kill of 400 birds in one night on an office building there. That was about 5 years ago when a high migration night coincided with some fog or something, and they had a lot of deaths from that.
Oh, my gosh. How sad that must have been to go to work and see that carnage. That's horrible.
And you know, I mean, Texas has really taken a hold of this program, an initiative of Lights Out, and it started very small in Texas. It's grown, and that's kind of what we're trying to do here in Louisiana. It hasn't been something that has been pushed very hard, but the Louisiana Wildlife Federation and Charles and others are really trying to make sure that we start getting that word out, and it's just a matter of getting in a habit. We like to know when that high migration is happening, but if we just get in the habit of turning those lights out at night, it's really going to make a difference, not just in the spring migration, but, of course, we have the fall migration, too. Right. And that's really when things are going to get crazy.
And collisions with buildings are a leading cause of bird deaths. Third leading cause, as a matter of fact, killing somewhere between 400 million and a billion birds a year.
Wow.
Now, you got to put that in context.
How many birds are there?
Yeah, you know? Right. We have about 7 billion birds as a overall average of all types of birds. And but that declined after 1970 over the 50-year period by 3 billion. So we're down to 7 billion, and every billion makes a difference. And so if we can make a dent in the bird deaths from collisions with buildings, we will have made a good contribution to closing that gap.
Gentlemen, we have a caller, Jim at I-12. Is that right? Jim, thank you for calling in to talk Louisiana.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, Jim.
There's another flip side to all the lighting that we have going on, and that is our seriously declining populations of fireflies. And they use their lights for mating, and all of the lights that we have that we leave on all the time, that's confusing them, and populations are dwindling rapidly and horribly.
Do you guys know anything about fireflies?
No, but it makes a lot of sense. Yeah. It does make a lot of sense. And hey, there's a cascading effect of this. And not only is light pollution hurting fireflies and birds at times, it's keeping us from seeing the beautiful stars at night. And you know, so, you know, if we can get more people to do that at night and even turn the lights, even if you can't turn your lights off completely, if you put a light shield on it or point them down toward the ground, or like you were saying, Jan, earlier, having a motion sensor instead of having them on all the time. Because security is something that's important, and we understand that.
Yeah.
But that is an interesting aspect, Jim, that we didn't even think about. I appreciate that.
I know. Jim, thank you for calling in. I've got a question about what birds do during the day. It looks like they migrate at night, right, after
mainly
sunset.
Do migrate at night. That's when they take off in large numbers, and that's why you see them on the radar and why BirdCast is able to say, they're coming, guys, get ready.
Yeah.
But during the day, they're refueling. They're resting and refueling. They make flights of up to 23, 24 hours, sometimes all the way straight from, say, North and South America or Central America, right here to Louisiana. And they're tired when they get here.
Yeah. While I love all birds, one of my favorites is hummingbirds.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw a documentary once, guys, that changed my view. I thought they were there for me to enjoy. And the documentary pointed out that they need so much fuel. And so it flipped my switch about I'm here to help them, not only to enjoy their beauty, but to help them survive and move on. And I know you feel like this about all bird species.
We do. And we feel that way, especially about the unnecessary lighting at night. We do have a light pollution problem in general. You talk to any observatory, they'll say there's too much light. We can't even see the stars anymore. And but the problem with birds is particularly critical in these migratory periods when they're very intensely flying and trying to get either up here or away from here for the winter and start running into buildings.
We'll be breaking in a minute, but I do have one last question for this segment. So what birds stay here? What are our most common birds that are here after the migration, you know, takes place?
Well, we have, well, let me just tell you a few migrants that are coming in right now. And wood thrush is one. They come in here to nest. They nest here and in more northerly states. They're coming in and they'll nest, they'll raise their young here. We have prothonotary warblers and many other small birds of the warbler category. There's 30 of them, 30 different species. They all come here and nest, hang around. Some of them pass through and go on further north as far as Canada to nest. So they're doing a variety of things, and there's 500 and something species passing through at different times. So there's a lot of different answers.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, we're going to take a break for 90 seconds, and we'll be right back. Please stay with us on Talk Louisiana. Welcome back to Talk Louisiana. This is Jan Swift filling in for Jim Inkster. Our number for call-ins is 877-217-5757. We're joined with Charles Williams and Jimmy Frederick of Louisiana Wildlife Federation. And in this segment, guys, I'd like you to talk about the mission, the core mission of the Louisiana Wildlife Federation, its history, and why you do what you do. Who would like to start?
I'll give a few of the basics here. The Wildlife Federation was formed back around in the early 1940s to assure scientific management of hunting and fishing. That was one of our main objectives originally. We've broadened over the years. We have a variety of members, hunters and fishermen, our original core group, birders, paddlers, people who camp out, anyone who enjoys the outdoors, and environmentalists who are concerned about the overall situation with in a variety of areas. And we have taken on our We continue, though, to stick with our core objective, which is wildlife and wildlife habitat, and keeping an eye on all regulations pertaining to that and all trends in the economy and in society which could adversely affect that.
No, we really pay attention to the legislature, and right now the legislature is moving very quickly, and there's a lot of bills that you may not even realize affect wildlife and habitat and things that have impacts that you may not even see all the time. You know, just for instance, one of the things that we are concerned about or watching very closely and studying is nearshore wind projects and offshore wind projects. Yeah. You know, wind is great, but when you have what they're proposing is nearshore windmills or wind farms in the 3 miles from the shore to out 3 miles to the in-state waters, it can very much adversely affect the migrating bird populations. So that's something we're watching.
Oh, gosh.
We're also, you know, very concerned about carbon sequestration in the Maurepaw, Lake Maurepaw area, something that on its face sounds like a great idea, but we want to make sure that where it is sited is appropriate and is well thought out and well studied. And so, as Charles mentioned, our focus is a scientific-based approach to protection, promotion, a conservation of wildlife in our wild lands, our habitat. So it's very, very important that we think about it from the coast to the Arkansas, you know, border, and from Mississippi to Texas. So we have different habitats throughout our state. We have many different habitats throughout our state, from coastal to prairie to pine forest up north. There's just so many things that affect and that we all enjoy so much. That's the reason we're the sportsman's paradise.
I was going to mention that, yeah. I know back in 1940 when this group was organized, it was to protect our sportsman's paradise.
Right. Yeah. And you know, a lot of people confuse us with the Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. We were an organization, Louisiana Wildlife Federation, was formed long before the Wildlife and Fisheries Department and actually was the impetus for the state to develop and to have a Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. So we work very closely with the department. We work very closely with the Wildlife and Fisheries Commission, which, of course, handles all the regulations for hunting, fishing, and protection of our species.
But they don't fund your organization.
Not in the least.
No, we're entirely funded by dues and dividends from a modest endowment that we have. We have about 10,000 members statewide, individual members, and about 20 organizations that are affiliates. And that includes, by the way, Baton Rouge Audubon, Orleans Audubon, and the Louisiana Ornithological Society. So, of course, all these organizations are very much on board for Lights Out and anything that pertains to helping birds.
That's great. We have a caller. We have John from Mid-City calling in from Baton Rouge. John, thank you for reaching out to us.
Sure thing. Charles, I'm wondering how global warming affects the bird population in Louisiana. And Jimmy, would it make sense to have LSU schedule the Louisville Cardinals and the Illinois State Redbirds?
Let me take the first part of that. The impact of global warming, of course, is huge. It's affecting migration patterns. To take waterfowl as a real straightforward example, fewer ducks are coming to Louisiana in the winter now because up north there's more food and the food sources that they have don't get frozen over. So migration is being affected. A lot of birds are being affected by the warming trends and are moving north. So a lot of movement of bird territories and ranges are occurring as a result of global warming.
Unclear on the second part of that question.
Yeah, I couldn't hear the whole question.
Scheduling.
I never thought about that. My husband hunts, and it has been tough.
Yes.
for duck hunters, huh?
Well, I got my start duck hunting. That's how I became
how
a birder. Flow days in the duck blind, which there are plenty of those, always were, but more so recently because of these changes and the later arriving ducks that just tend to stay up north more now.
Right.
Now, as far as scheduling other birds, I didn't quite catch that. Was it something about a cardinal?
We couldn't hear the question. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but thank you for calling in.
Thanks, John.
Yeah. So I'm curious about other work that you do. I know that you recently honored some young hunters,
yes,
including two 10-year-old young ladies.
Two 10-year-olds. It's our Youth Hunter of the Year program, and it's something that we actually partner with the Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries on, which we're very excited to get back going again because it was a hiatus from 2019 through the COVID years.
Right.
And, of course, this is our first time to get back, and we honored two young ladies, 10 years old, Lizzie Fry and Paisley Stevenson, and also two young men, Blaze Coco and Drew Dubuque. The point of the whole thing is that it is about young hunters under the age of 15, and it's not about the success of the hunt. It's not about harvesting an animal necessarily. It's about the experience, and it's about how they convey in an essay form, they convey their experience with their family, with friends, and why it's important to them to be a hunter or be a person in Louisiana woods. They don't have to actually have hunted in Louisiana, but they have to be a Louisiana resident. And we'll start that. We'll have our nominations for that in the fall, and we'll give those awards out again. So if you want to go to our website, it's lawildlifefed.org, and you can click on the button, and you can read their essays right on their picture. You see a picture of them and read their essays.
And those awards to those youth hunters were accompanied also by a number of other awards, statewide awards, the State Conservationist of the Year, Educator of the Year, Conservation Communicator of the Year, and a number of others, where we are recognizing people who are doing wildlife conservation work in different ways in different parts of the state.
And that was our 58th annual award program for
Congratulations.
That.
Congratulations.
So it was well received. We had a great time.
I think back with, I hope my daughter Taylor is listening, when she and her sister were young, my husband would take them out and they had their camouflage,
yep,
and he taught them gun safety and just how to act around other hunters and always looking out for everybody's best interests, which I think it's a great lesson to learn at any age.
But. Absolutely, and hunting is a form of conservation, and it's a wonderful thing for people to be involved in, be in the woods, enjoy themselves, be safe, and it makes a difference for wildlife conservation.
And the license fees fund a lot of the acquisitions of land in the state, the wildlife management areas, wildlife refuges, and so forth. A lot of this has been paid for by hunting and fishing license revenues.
Right.
Another program that we have is called our Edgar Vaillant Conservation Leadership Corps. And this is a group of young adults. They're in college. They're undergraduate college students from around the state. We had 19 students go through our semester program this year from 7 different colleges and universities across the state. And the goal of the program is to, one, teach these young people who are very interested in conservation, whether it's in biology, or we had different majors across biology, environmental science, all kinds of different things, but to also make them better communicators, better mm-hmm. advocates for not just Louisiana Wildlife Federation, but conservation in general, and to give them the tools to do that. So it's really great.
As we wind down, we just have a little bit of time left. Can you tell people how they can, I know you said the website, but how people can get involved, support your efforts, and help fund, if they choose to, some of your initiatives?
Well, they could join the Wildlife Federation for starters. We'd welcome them as members. They can also go on the websites of American Bird Conservancy or the National Audubon Society and link to ways you can save birds from collisions. Mm-hmm. And that includes the lights out, but also the reflectivity problem of glass and how to deal with that on your home.
I'd like to thank both Charles Williams and Jimmy Frederick of Louisiana Wildlife Federation. Thank you for your commitment to our state and your service. Please. Welcome back to Talk Louisiana. This is Jan Swift sitting in for Jim Inkster. Our number is 877-217-5757 if you'd like to call in. We're now welcoming Dr. Holly Bothy, principal of the WD and Mary Smith Baker Career Center, and also a former Bessie board member for our district in the Lafayette area. Holly, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, I appreciate your time. It must be busy winding down the school year. Tell me about that.
We are. We celebrated our student success on Friday, had a nice event where we were able to provide honor cords for graduation for our class of 2024. And we are continuing to test kids for industry-based credentials. So that's the main focus at the Career Center this week.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that, about your students and how they learn trades and how they partner, I guess, with their school, their home school?
Yes. So students in Lafayette Parish who attend a public high school have the option to spend part of their day at the Career Center, so they can spend a 3-period block of the day here. And they're working on industry-based credentials to launch their careers. So we have students who are planning to go straight into the workforce or to community college, but then we also have students who are interested on the opposite end of the spectrum and maybe will require advanced degrees. So we have a medical assistant program, and we have a number of students who will go straight into the workforce right out of high school. We've been able to partner with Oshners, and those students did job shadowing recently. Many of them will go and enroll in SOLA CC here in Lafayette and work at the same time. We have an EMT program for our students who are interested in working on ambulances. We have a CNA program for our students who want to work in the nursing homes or in the hospitals. Mm. And so it's really a great way for students to launch their careers right out of high school. We have a manufacturing program. We call it machining or computer integrated manufacturing. Many people don't really understand this yet, but the future of the economy here in Lafayette is going to be based around manufacturing. We've been able to recruit manufacturing corporations here to the city that can employ people straight out of high school and give them phenomenal careers and ways to grow over time. Mm-hmm. So it's exciting to be with students who are not necessarily interested in a bachelor's degree. They are interested in figuring out what kind of trade that they can obtain so that right when they get out of high school, they can get a good paying job.
Right. And with the high cost of education to begin with, it's a gift to have your school.
Well, I certainly enjoy being here and am proud of the opportunities mm-hmm. we provide, whether it's for our future auto technicians or those interested in auto paint body. We have carpentry, cosmetology, we have culinary, electrical, HVAC, welding, in addition to the medical ones and the manufacturing I talked about. Mm-hmm. And then I'm really excited that we are also preparing to offer a pre-educator program. So, Jan, you know how much I love being an educator and how much joy I find in the profession. And so to be able to also recruit for the teaching profession is important to me. So we're working on applications for next year. We're actually going to have meetings tonight and tomorrow night for students who have applied to come. And we still have openings for next year in our pre-educator program, also in our machining, our medical assistant, and our EMT programs also have some room. If anybody knows who's listening, a student who is in high school in a Lafayette Parish Public High School, tell them to check us out. We want to serve. I mean, I'm happy to serve every student we can possibly serve and help them launch their careers.
So do they graduate from their home school? Like, let's say they go to Lafayette High or something. So they graduate from that school, but you supplement their education with the trade.
Yes. So we have rams and lions and bears and sharks. we love it. I feel like we have the most diverse place in Lafayette, honestly, because our students come from all kinds of backgrounds. And I think some people would wonder how that works, but it's also really neat because it's kind of like a small town, right? It's
right.
A small school. We get to know a lot of the students and are able to build relationships with them. And so it works. They get along, and I think the kids enjoy that, getting to know people from other, from other schools. I was talking to a student this morning. His mother was here for the success celebration that we had on Friday, and she had actually been a student in our cosmetology program. And he's here now, and he's a student at our school. So I think people who know about us are excited, and they come back. But part of my job is to just help tell the story because, in society, I think people have been hyper-focused on you have to have a four-year college education to have a good life. And that's just not necessarily true.
Right.
You certainly need some post-secondary training. I know One Acadiana has the goal of 55% of our working age adults will have some kind of high school plus certification by 2025. And the Career Center is working to do that with some of our youngest citizens.
Right, right. Well, you bring that gusto, your love of education to everything you do. And I want to point out to listeners, you were recognized as Teacher of the Year, and also you served on the BESSE board. So I'd like for you, if you will, to segue into your teaching career, what led you into teaching, and some of the issues that you feel are important to our state.
Sure. I was destined to be a teacher. My grandparents were educators in a tiny East Texas town. I didn't really talk about that when I was running because you know how Louisianians are. But I have three grandparents who were born and raised in East Texas. I have one grandparent who's a Cajun, so that's enough to get you to the heart of Cajun country. The Frankses, though, were educators. So I had a grandmother who was a first grade teacher. And when I would walk in a grocery store with her, people would stand up a little straighter and they were opening doors for us. And so I felt like I was walking around with a celebrity at 4 years old. It felt like I was walking around with a celebrity. And it was, yes, Mrs. Franks, Mrs. Franks, how are you? Can I get you something, Mrs. Franks? And so I think my perception of the profession is different than, unfortunately, what a lot of people think now. And truly, there's so much value in being able to work with young people and help them find their gifts. And that's the joy that I find in it. Every day that I can help a child maybe build their confidence or figure out what their next step is a great, joyful day. And so, I mean, that was true about my grandmother. My grandfather died when I was two, but he had been the superintendent of the district. And I think I was about seven when the town honored him for Pineland Day. And so to see my grandmother and my family on the stage getting a plaque for my grandfather was certainly a marking moment in my life. But then my grandmother hung the plaque at the back door. You know, a lot of us put plaques on shelves and you never see it again. But every time I walked out of my grandmother's door, I was reminded of the important role that educators play in our lives. And so in my mind, there was nothing else for me to do. There was nothing more important.
Yeah. I'm a product of public school education, and I thank all of my teachers for what they did. And I understand there's probably a teacher shortage at this point, right?
Yes.
People are looking at what their career path is going to be, and we're dependent on teachers to raise our next generation, if you want to touch on that.
We are absolutely dependent on teachers, and there's nothing more important in an education system. And so this is not just my personal bias, research will tell you this, that the most important in-school factor influencing outcomes for students is the teacher in the classroom. And so I'm so excited about Teacher Appreciation Week and encourage everybody to thank their teachers, encourage their teachers for the things that they do, and realize the important role that our teachers do play. And I encourage those people who are who are maybe not happy in their career to see what it would take to work in the education system. And even, Jana, an incredible way that people could give back is that maybe you've retired from some other profession and you could be a bus driver, or you could be a custodian, or you could be a cafeteria tech, or maybe you want to change careers and become a teacher. Those are ways to have an impact in society right here and right now. Our public schools are the places where our future is being built every single day. And so if your career is something where you don't get that satisfaction and you don't get that joy, and I certainly invite you to think about how you may contribute to the public school, because, you know, driving the bus, I mean, we've all seen the information about the need for substitute bus drivers or additional bus drivers. That's a way to play a role in our system and help make people's lives better. It's also, you know, there's a lot of people in our state that have resources, but there's some people in our state that don't. And one of the most important factors in terms of equity and providing access to an education is a bus picking a child up and bringing them to school.
Right, right. Well, you have certainly dedicated your career. And I want to thank you again for your service on the BESSE board. A lot of people don't realize that's an unpaid position. So while you might get per diem, you've served without, you know, pay.
Well, you're welcome. It was quite a life experience.
Yes.
I wish I would have journaled through it, right? Like if I have a regret, it's that I didn't journal through the process, because what an incredible experience to meet people that I would have never met before. It's actually how I met you.
Right.
And
right.
So it's brought so many wonderful people into my life. I feel like I have multiple degrees, right, in the things that I've learned from a communication standpoint or a political science standpoint, and I, you know, it was an interesting season of my life.
Thank you, Dr. Holly Bofi, for joining us. Please stay with us through the break. Welcome back to Talk Louisiana. This is Jan Swift, sitting in for Jim Inkster. Our number is 877-217-5757. We're joined by Henry Turner Jr., who's here to discuss the 7th Annual Baton Rouge Soul Food Festival coming up on May 18th and 19th at the East Baton Rouge Main Library on Goodwood. Henry, of course, is well known for his blues, soul, funk, and reggae performances. I'm looking forward to hearing about this two-day family-oriented event, and I want to thank Henry for joining us today. Welcome to Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jan.
Yes, I'm so excited. Yes. I looked you up. I'd heard about your music, but I have to say I'm a new fan. Just love what I've seen online. I live in the Lafayette area, and you bring so much to the table for this Soul Food Festival. So if you'd like to tell us about that.
Yeah, it's a great idea. It's you know, it's something that you know, I saw as a market gap, you know, 8 years ago, and started preparing to bring some interest to that, you know, segment of the African-American community. We had a great legacy in soul food throughout, from the 50s through the 70s and 80s. And then we lost the legacy and things started changing. And, you know, our foods became branded as unhealthy. And then we kind of took a step back. And then, of course, with the regulations and health departments and things of that nature. The mom and pop so food places kind of, you know, went underground and never to resurface again until we saw that in gas stations with other ethnic cultures where, you know, some African-American would be in the kitchen cooking in the gas station. So I thought, hey, since we're having a resurgence of the food, why not, you know, try to resurge the whole community-based thing and bring some of those soul food cooks and restaurants out to the forefront and see who's still standing and what benefit it could be to the community. And, of course, with the modern change of, you know, dietetics, all the different other things, you know, we're at a whole different level of what we can cook in a healthy sense for soul food.
So people actually will enter and they'll showcase their own talents. So they are there different categories of food or is it just soul food?
We you know, we cover all the soul food dishes and it's a lot of it. You'd have to Google soul food, you know, to really get a real grip on how much. But we have like dessert categories and we have, you know, like soul food cooks and chefs that prepare, you know, entrees and
Okay. The sound is going in and out. Thank you for bearing with us, Henry. So I saw you have a great lineup of artists, too. Like, you've got music throughout the event. Is Henry there, Robin? Henry, are you back on the phone? Thank you. So, Henry, you've got a great lineup of artists. I don't know if we're not hearing. Here we go. Thank you. I was looking on the printout. I don't know if we have communication.
Yeah, that was a real. But can you hear me?
Yes, okay. I can hear you now. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Oh, no problem. Great. We have bands, R&B blues legacy bands that's on the show. And then we have like some younger bands that we have.
Henry, we're having trouble hearing you. I don't know if it's the reception. I'm going to thank our listeners for bearing with us. I'm looking at the printout. I see on, let's see, Sunday, May 19th, there's a whole list of artists performing from 11 o'clock in the morning on, starting with Giselle Harrelson, Kerwin Feeling, and others, and goes throughout the day to 6:30. And then Henry Turner and his band, Henry Turner Jr. and Flavor, actually play at 5:30. They'll be showcasing their blues, soul, funk, and reggae. So it looks like a great event for people to check out. Is Henry back on?
I am.
Yes, okay. Henry, thank you for being so patient. So let's talk about the event. Before you even start this, on Thursday, May 16th, there's an opening, right? You've got neck bones, rice and gravy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're doing like some necks, like turkey necks, beef neck bones, probably some pork neck bones, and all the traditional neck bone type stuff, right?
And there's also going to be... Go ahead.
And all of that is taking place Thursday night at our pre-party, which is traditionally all that Henry Turner Jr.'s listening room, 2733 North Street. And that comes also with...
Yeah, so people can register for that online?
Oh, absolutely. BrSoulFoodFest.com, they can find like VIPs online. They can get the pre-party VIP ticket on. Now it comes with a full buffet of the you know, soul food type stuff. So it's an exciting party, man. We've had that party for 7 years with the event. So it's like a VIP is
okay. So the event is from 7 to midnight on the evening of May 16th, and people can pay $30 at the door for tickets.
And it's 25 online.
Okay. And then the main festival, is there a charge for that? Did I see that it was actually free to the public?
Yeah, it's free to the public, and there's air-conditioned VIP area and stuff that you can get for like $100, and it includes foods, drinks, alcohol, beverages, and an air-conditioned area. So we make the main part of the festival free to the public. All the entertainment is free. There's a vendor village, food village, all that stuff. Just walk right up and purchase for cash. Yeah,
I love the main library, that East Baton Rouge Library on Goodwood. I actually grew up out there, Henry, and that was my library. I was a book nerd, and I was curious how you chose that location.
Well, we started producing our events in downtown Baton Rouge, and kind of grew out of a couple of the venues that we were working with, and we started creating a community relations partnership with the organizations. Mm-hmm. And the EBR Library Systems was perfect because we include film in a lot of stuff that we do. We have a film festival also that we do in December, and they have the film screening rooms, and they have hospitality rooms and things of that nature. So it's perfect for the type of event that we do, because we try to do a variety event. We try to do music, art, film, music, food, you know. So it was perfect. And Mary Stein is a really awesome lady and has a good open mind to the community. And everybody recognized that we'd grown out of Riverfront Park with the Soul Food Festival. And so we just, expand to a new location and keep everything kosher and just keep growing, you know.
How many people do you anticipate based on
We anticipate probably 15,000 plus over 2 days.
Oh, my goodness.
We started with the Soul Food Festival 7 years ago. I think our first year we did 2,000 people. Mm-hmm. And then the last year downtown, we did 15,000 people on the riverfront. That was last year. And it was just a blast. It was a blowout. Mm-hmm. We ended up taking over a good bit of both sides of the street on River Road, which led to, okay, it's time to expand. We were interfering with the graduations at the River Center. We ended up having to rent all of the front of the USS Kid, and it was just crazy. Wow. Mm,
that's cool.
But it was a good experience, a good community experience. It lets you know that people of all walks of life, all colors, all nationalities, love soul food, and the resurgence of it is incredible because people are now in a better frame of mind. They understand what the components are. And then the visitors, oh, my God, we get visitors from all over, Jan.
I bet.
And they come in, and then it's guest chefs from different parts of the region, right? Because it's really a regional soul food festival, what it is. We have a lot of local cooks and chefs that do a great job, and we have a food contest, you know, that we do, like, desserts and entrees and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing just to watch the amount of stuff that happens and the way it happens, you know, in terms of introducing one dish so many different ways. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow.
That's awesome. Are you a chef? Do you like to cook?
Well, I would not call myself a chef, but I love cooking.
Stick with the music.
Well, we have a whole food side dish every Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I normally cook that dish and bring it in. Mm-hmm. And that's so, you know, being tonight.
Right. We have about a minute left, Henry. Tell me a little bit about your career, if you would. Right under a minute.
I mean, basically, I like to describe myself as a music business entrepreneur. I mean, I'm one of the person that basically as a guitarist. My mother sang in the church. My father was a club owner before, 8 years before I was born. And music was just in my blood, and it started as a child. You know, my first instrument was drums, and I graduated to guitar and vocals and stuff like that. And I'm a singer-songwriter by trade. That's what I do. I've had several different nations of Henry Turner. My first wanted to be like a little blues aficionado, and then I went into top 40 funk.
I want to thank Henry Turner Jr. for joining us and talking about the upcoming